The following shiur has been presented by Rav Chaim Weg, Rosh Kollel of the Beis Havad Dayanus Kollel, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
To reach the center for marital or familial matters, call the Evan Ezer Division at 1-888-485-VAAD or visit thehalachacenter.org.
From this week's parasha, Parashas Miketz, the Gemara at the end of Bava Basra derives the concept of an arev, the concept of a guarantor. Generally speaking, in Chayshe Mishpat, in order for somebody to be liable to pay somebody else, there has to be some sort of exchange of value. For example, if Reuven buys a chafetz from Shimon, he buys an object from Shimon, since he received Shimon's object, in exchange, he's mechuyev to pay Shimon for the object he received. If Reuven borrows money from Shimon, he's mechuyev to pay Shimon for the money that he borrowed. He received $100, therefore he has to give back $100. If Reuven is mazik Shimon, so he's liable, he's mechuyev to pay Shimon because he destroyed $100. He was mazik $100 of Shimon's property. Therefore, he has to replace what was genizikt, what was destroyed. If Reuven steals from Shimon, so again, he has to replace what he stole. In most Chayshe Mishpat, almost all Chayshe Mishpat exchanges, the payment is in exchange of value, in exchange for something which one either received or damaged, which belonged to the other person. However, we find in halacha the concept of an arev, the concept of a guarantor. Reuven lends Shimon money. Shimon received the money. Levi got absolutely nothing. However, since Levi guaranteed the loan, since the only reason why Reuven lent that money to Shimon was because Levi said that if Shimon defaults on the loan, then Levi will indeed repay Reuven. The halacha is that Levi is Meshubid, Levi must pay. Although Reuven's money was handed to Shimon and not to Levi, but yet Levi becomes Meshubid, Levi has responsibility, and Levi must pay that money back if Shimon defaults on the loan. And as we proceed, we'll see various halachic explanations why that is true. However, the makar of the concept of arev is from this week's parasha. Yosef HaTzadik tells the Shvatim that they should not come back to Mitzrayim to buy food. They cannot get Shimon back unless Binyamin comes along. And Yaakov Avinu is nervous to send Binyamin. He's scared that we know the Sot is Mekatreg B'shas HaSakana. He feels by sending him on the Derech, sending him on the road, he is putting him in danger. Rachel's no longer alive. Yosef is missing. Yaakov Avinu does not want to send Binyamin. And we find that two of the Shvatim guaranteed to Yaakov Avinu that they will bring Binyamin back. The first offer is made in Perek Mem Beis, Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Vayomer Reuven el Avi Lemer. Reuven says to his father, Es shnei vonai tomis im loy avienu elecha. My two sons should die if I do not bring Yosef back. I do not bring Binyamin back. Tno oisi al yodi vani ashivenu elecha. Reuven guarantees. He's mishabed himself to the point that two of his children will die if two of his sons will die if he does not make good on his promise to bring Binyamin back. That, the Gemara says, is arvus. It's accepting full responsibility with a knas on oneself to do something for somebody else. And the pasuk, the Gemara in Bava Basra, actually brings the pasuk later on of Yehuda. Yehuda says to Yaakov Avinu, Perek Mem Gimel, pasuk Chtes, Anoichi Ervenu, I will guarantee it. Miyodi Tivakshenu, Im Loi Haviyosi Elecha, Vehitzagtiv Lefonecha, Vechatosi Lecha Kol Hayom. Yehuda assumes full responsibility for Binyamin's welfare. He makes himself liable for this knas of v'chatozi l'cha kol hayomim, that he will lose his olam haba. Yehuda puts his olam haba on the line as a guarantee that he will bring Binyamin back to Yaakov Avinu. And we know that it was chal. It's a big shayla, l'mais, he did bring Binyamin back. But yet Chazal tell us that the atzamos of Yehudu megalgalin ba'orin, that the nidui, which he accepted upon himself, was chal, even though it was only made al tnai, which is a whole different discussion. But al kopanim, you see that it was chal. This concept that Yehuda accepted full responsibility, and as a result, the knas, he was liable in this knas, which he accepted upon himself. And this, the Gemara says, is the mikar of the concept of arvus, al-koponim, in certain circumstances. And for the rest of arvus, the concept of arvus, the Gemara brings psukim in nach, which we learn out from there, the concept of an orev. But I'll call upon him the concept of an orev kablon, a fully responsible orev, we derive from this week's parasha. The chiddush is that although he has not received anything tangible, yet he can be liable for as if he received that object. That's the concept of an orev, someone who becomes liable, although we do not have a full exchange of value. But before we discuss some of the halachas and the practical applications of arvus, I wanted to spend a few minutes to discuss Reuven's offer. Reuven says, Vayeme Reuven al Aviv, Lamer, Eshte Bonai Thomas, my two sons will die, Im Loi Avienu Alecha, Tuna Isi al Yodi, Vani Ashivenu Alecha. Reuven, in the Pshut Yashal Mikra, offers the life of his two sons in exchange for bringing Binyamin back safely. Chazal tell us, in Bereshis Rabbah, and it's quoted here in Rashi, like Kibel Dvarav Shel Reuven, that Yaakov Avinu did not accept the words of Reuven. Omar, he said, Bechor Shoyte Huzeh. This is a Bechor Shoyte. Omar Loham is Bonav. He wants to kill his sons. V'chi Bonav Heim V'loi Bonai. Pasha Pshat, that Yaakov Avinu said, what do I gain if Reuven's sons are killed as a result of non-fulfilling this arvus, l'chaira, the same way, Yaakov will have the tsar of losing Binyamin, in addition, he will have the tsar of losing two grandchildren. That's the Pasha Pshat. There's a fascinating Tshuva Chassam Sefer in Tshuva Reish Ches, which Chassam Sefer, actually the Meritzchias, is very bothered by the arvus of Reuven. What does it mean that Reuven offered as Shnei Bonai Thomas? A person is not the Bailam on his children's life. What offer was Reuven making over here when he offered Yaakov Avinu as Shnei Bonai Thomas? So the Chassam Sefer says something very, very fascinating. We all know that Yaakov Avinu had a Chelek HaBechira that had to be given out. And one of the shvatim was going to be divided into two shvatim. The Chassam Sofer says that Reuven's offer at Shnei Bonai Thomas means that Reuven was willing to give up the Chelek HaBachir. He said to Yaakov Inu, we find that the word of Chiyus refers to a Chelek in Eretz Yisrael. The Pasuk says that Yeshua and Kalev were Chayu Min HaAnashim. They lived from the other Meraglim. Chazal tell us that they received the Meraglim's portion in Eretz Yisrael. Chayu is a Lashon, living. Getting a portion of Eretz Yisrael is considered to be the word which captures that is also chius, being alive. You find other places that a livelihood is referred to as chayim. Someone who calls his friend in Russia is Yerid Imei Lechayev. He can go ahead and destroy his livelihood. Pasuk chiusei, you destroyed his livelihood. The Lashon chius over here, we find the Lashon chius means getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael. If the Lashon of chius means receiving a portion in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore we could translate the Lashon of Misa as not getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, Reuven said, as Shnei Bonai Thomas, we know that Eretz Yisrael was Nischalik Lishvatim, that Eretz Yisrael, according to many Rishonim, was divided into 12 equal strips, and each Shevet ended up with an equal portion, whether it was a large Shevet or a smaller Shevet, and therefore Shevet Yosef, who ended up the Bechor Lemaisa with Ephraim and Menashe, ended up with double what Yehuda, what Don had, although they were very large Shvatim. And therefore, Reuven said, as Shnei Bonai Thomas, Reuven was offering to give up the Chelek HaBachir. He said that if I do not carry out my Arvus, I do not bring Binyamin back, so then I will lose the Chelek HaBachir. I will lose the concept of Shnei Bonim, two portions in Eretz Yisrael, the Chelek of the Bachir. To which Yaakov Inu responded, Bechor Sheita Huze. Bechor Sheita, we find in Gemara in Baba Basra that a Bechor Min O'Aim is called a Bechor Sheita. It's a Lashon of a Hadas Sheita. A Hadas Sheita is a Hadas which is not properly Mishulish. It's not foolish, the Hadas. It's not silly. But rather, because it's not functioning properly, it's called a Hadas Sheita. A Bechor Sheita is a Bechor Min O'Aim because he does not get a Nachla. What Yaakov Avinu was telling Reuven over here is, you're a Bechor Sheita. What do you mean? You're an improper Bechor. Meaning that Reuven had already lost the Chelek HaBechor earlier. And since he had already lost the Chelek HaBechor earlier, Yaakov Avinu was planning already to give it to Yosef when Mitzvashem, if Yosef will reappear. But Al Kopanim, Reuven had already lost the Chelek HaBechor. And therefore, Reuven's offer to give up the Chelek HaBechor in order as a guarantor to the bringing back of Yosef was not accepted because he is a Bechor Sheita, because he's an improper Bechor. The Chelek HaBechor he had already lost, and therefore the Chelek HaBechor cannot be the guarantee, the Knas, the guarantee for the safe return of Binyamin. The Briska Rav in Parshas Vayechi on the Pasuk, Vayomer Elai, Hineni Mafrecha Vehir Bisicha Unsaticha Lekahal Amim, before Yaakov Avinu makes Ephraim and Menashe into Shvatim, so Yaakov Avinu quotes a promise from the Rabbeinu Shlalom, Hineni Mafrecha Vehir Bisicha Unisaticha Lekahal Amim. The Targum Unklus teaches Lekahal Amim Lekinshas Shvatim, to a group of Shvatim. And
at the original Havtacha in Parshas Vayishlach, where the Rabbeinu Shloim tells Yaakov Avinu, Goy ukahal goyim, that Yaakov Avinu is going to have a goy ukahal goyim, so the Targum also teaches, Am the Kinshas Shotim, a nation, and that nation will be comprised of a group of Shotim. And the Biskarov explains that the Rabbeinu Shloim promised Yaakov Avinu that Klal Yisrael, as a nation, will survive forever. A nation will come out of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and that will be Klal Yisrael, and they will be Yerush Eretz Yisrael, and they will survive forever. And then the Rabbeinu Shloim promised Yaakov Avinu that this nation will be a Kahal Amim, a Kinshas Shvatim, a group of Shvatim. That is a Din Shvatim. And Shvatim is negated to two things. First of all, Eretz Yisrael is divided according to Shvatim. The Yerusha Saaretz, every Shevet got its portion in Eretz Yisrael. And according to many Rishonim, the portions that the individual Shvatim had was equal. That the Halacha, the Rav Tarba Nachlosai, Vla Ma'at Tamet Nachlosai, was only referring to the Mishpachas in the Shevet, but the Eretz Yisrael, according to many Rishonim, was divided into 12 equal parts. But Al Kolponim, Yerusha Saaretz, had a Din Shvatim, it was divided amongst the Shvatim. Second of all, there's a bris crucial to the Shvatim that the Shvatim will last forever. There's a bris Shvatim Gemiri, we have a Kabbalah, like Kala Shivta, that a Shevet will never cease to exist. In fact, it's Muchach in the Gemara Psachim that we have, although primarily, besides the Kehanim Levim, we're primarily Enoklach, Meshevi Yehuda, and Sheva Binyamin. But it's muchach that there are other members of other Shvatim amongst us. It's Gemara and Psachim. Shvatim have to last forever, and Yerusha Saaretz is through Shvatim. After Yaakov Avinu makes Ephraim Menashe into Shvatim, so the Pasuk says, the Yukari Behem Shmi V'Shem HaVaisai, the Ramban explains, Yukari Behem Shmi V'Shem HaVaisai means they will last forever. The Rizkirov goes on to explain, and he says that that's the pshat by the Chet HaEgel. When the Rabbeinu Shlom tells the Moshe Rabbeinu that he's going to destroy Klal Yisrael and build a nation out of the children of Moshe, so the Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Rabbeinu Shlom, Zechor l'Avram l'Yitzchak l'Yaakov avadecha nishbata l'embach, v'tadaber leim arbe zarachem, v'chol ha'oretz hazois asher amarti etein l'zarachem. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he davens for Klal Yisrael, he talks about Eretz Yisrael. He talks about V'chol Oretz Hazoyis Asher Amarti Etein L'Zarachem. How does Eretz Yisrael come in? So the Biskarov explains, very geschmack. Because what did the Rebbeinu Shlom tell Moshe Rabbeinu? I'll wipe out Klal Yisrael and bring a nation from your descendants. Moshe Rabbeinu, that's impossible. Because the bris for the Shvatim. The Shvatim have to exist forever. The Shvatim have to be Yerush Eretz Yisrael. And it brings a Lashon from the Medrash Rabbah, Kishem Shenishbata La'Avis V'Kiyamti Imoyim, Af L'Shvatim Nishbata V'Kiyamti Imoyim Bris. U'L'Dvorecha Re'ata Maimin Mishavet Levi, Mayesh Lach Loimah L'Shavet Ruvein L'Shvatim Acherim. Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Rabbeinu Shloim, that the same way you made a promise to the Avis, you made a promise to the Shvatim. And therefore, you can't wipe out Klal Yisrael and make a new Klal Yisrael from Moshe Rabbeinu's descendants. Because if what the Rabbeinu Shlom does that, it will be bottled the bris of the Shvatim. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Because the Iker Havtocha of the Shvatim is that Yerusha Haaretz will be Yarshined through the Shvatim. The way we're learning now from the Mishka Rav, it's even more geschmack. If we learn at the Chassam Sefer that Reuven was willing to put his Chelek HaBechira to Shvatim on the line, it's very geschmack the Lashon as Shnei Bonai Thomas, my two sons will die. Meaning to, now you don't have to explain, Thomas means they won't have a full Chelek in Eretz Yisrael because Yerusha Saaretz won't be through them. We can learn as Shnei Bonai Thomas means literally, they will be able to die. Because had the two sons be two shvatim, then the bris, that shvatim can never be wiped out, would be negea to the children and the enekloch of these shtei bonim. As shtei bonim bonai tomos, we could teach means that they will have the ability to die. They won't be part of the ability to wipe out. We know that certain grandchildren of Yaakov Avinu, Mishpachas, were lost. The five sons, five Mishpachas. From Binyamin was lost, Rashi tells us. Other Mishpachas were lost. Mishpachas can be lost. Shvatim can't be lost. As Shnei Banai Tomos is that they will be Mishpachas and not Shvatim, and therefore they don't have to be Kayim La'ad Ula'omei Elam. That's the Chassam Sefer, that what Ruvain was being Ma'ariv was his Chelek HaBechera, to which Yaakov responded, you lost it anyway. And Yehuda put down as his Chelek HaOrev, he put down his Olam Haba, he'd be Menuda in Olam Haba, and that Yaakov Avinu accepted. Now, when we talk about an Orev, we find in Halacha three different types of Orevim. One type is a regular Orev. A regular Orev, the Malve must collect money from the Leve, take the Leve to Bezdin, and after the Leve refuses to pay, ran off, doesn't have money to pay, then and only then may the Malve turn to the Orev. That's a regular Orev. The next type of Orev is Orev Kablan. An Orev Kablan means that he's taking also primary responsibility. That means that the Malve can either go to the Orev or to the Leive wherever he wants. Wherever the Malve wants to go to collect his money, whether he wants to go to the Orev or to the Leive, both possibilities are available to the Malve. There's a third type of Orev called an Orev Shluf Dutz. The Orev Shluf Dutz, the Malve interacts totally with the Orev. The Orev is the primary responsible party. If the Malve has a reason why he does not want to accept money from the Leve, he does not have to. The Leve could push the Malve to the Orev instead of paying himself. And that is considered to be an Orev Shluf Dutz, that the Malva goes after the Orev, and only after the Orev pays, then the Orev will go after the Leve. If the Orev does not have money, then and only then can the Malva go after the Orev. As we mentioned earlier, we have to understand how is it that the achrayis of the Orev is chal. With what din is the Orev Meshubet? There is no exchange of value. The Gemara says that Yehuda was an Orev Kablan, and therefore we learn Orev Kablan from our Gemara, our Pesukim, our Parsha, and a regular Orev we learn from Pesukim in Mishlei. The question is, how is the Orev Meshubed? How does the Orev become responsible to pay? And the Stipler in Kedushin, Siman Yud Beis, goes through four shitas in the Rishonim exactly how the Orev is Meshubed. The Rambam's Mahalach is that the Orev is Meshubed like a Kinyan Aydaisa. The fact that he acknowledges that he has this hischaivus on him to pay for the loive if the loive does not pay, since, like Hoidoas Baldin Kimei Eden Dami, since he said it, and he said it with a firmness, and the malve was moitzi mois al piv, it works with the kinyan oidaisa that since he admitted it to be true, and the Malve had a loss because of this admission, he was Moitzi Mois Al Piv, he let money out of his pocket due to the word of the Orev, so therefore the Orev becomes Meshubet. The Ritva learns that there is in the Orev a exchange of value of sorts. The Gemara tells us that there is a tremendous hana'ah, a tremendous pleasure, which the Orev gets. It's pleasurable to the Orev that the Malva trusted him to let money out of his rishus on the say-so of the Orev. And since he let the money out of his rishus on the say-so of the Orev gets pleasure from that, from the trust that the Malva bestowed in the Orev. And therefore, the Ritva learns that the reason why the Malva is mishubed to pay the Chayiv is in exchange of this hana, of this pleasure that the Orev receives by being trusted, similar to like we make a Kinyan Sudr by a Chasana. We sort of exchange the Sudr, the Aiden pick up a handkerchief, a yarmulke, a pen, and exchange that for the hischaivus of the ksuba. So too, this token amount of hana is in exchange for the hischaivus, for the liability which the Orev takes on. The Rashbam has a third mahalach, and the Rashbam says that it works like a shliach, that since the Malve does with his money as the Orev commands him to do, for example, lend it to the Leiva, so since the Malve is listening to the Orev and allowing the Orev to control his money, since the Orev controls the Malve's money, it's as if the Malva is his shliach to give that money to the Leiva, and it's in direct exchange of the $100 given to the Leiva that the Malva becomes responsible to pay, because since the Malva allowed him to spend the Malva's money as the Orev sees fits, so that's as if that money was given, that's like an exchange, we exchange the Malva's money as if it was the Orev's money, and since the Orev is operating with the Malva's money as if it was his own, so therefore the Orev becomes Meshubid back to the Malva, his $100 exchanged for the Malva's $100, which the Orev was kind of sort of by doing with it as he saw fit. And the final Mahalach is in Mugi Yosef. The Mugi Yosef says that the Hischaivus is really Chal with just Dibur. Although, generally speaking, when one makes a verbal commitment without a kinyan, that is not enough for the verbal commitment to be chal. But over here, since the Malve is losing money and he's acting upon the request of the Orev, not like we said earlier, that we look at it like it's an exchange of these $100 to those $100. The $100 belongs to the Malve. But since the Malve is giving out money because the Orev told him to, so therefore that is we see the Orev's commitment as being firm and final, even without a kinyan, and that is how the Orev is mishubit. In Hilchus Ribis, there is a tremendous machlok chilek. There's a tremendous difference between an Orev and an Orev kavod. Besides the Chayshim Mishpat difference, nafkamina, we said before, who does the Malva go after? Does he have to go after the Leiva first, or could he go after the Arev first? But in Hilchus Ribis, there is a tremendous nafkamina lahalacha between an Arev and an Arev Kavod. Let's say, for example, Ruvain borrows $100 from a guy, and Shimon signs off as the Arev. This halva was a halva beribis. A year later, the malve comes to the leve. The leve does not have any money, and therefore the Orev pays $120 to the malve. The Orev pays $120 to the malve on behalf of the Orev. The question is, how much money can he collect back from the leve? The Malva
over here was a guy. So there's no problem paying ribbis to the malva. But since both the Arev and the Leive are Yidden, so a halva of 100 for 120 may not be paid between one Jew and a fellow Jew. In the case of Arev, it's very clear in Shulchan Aruch, since the Malva's first recourse was the Leive, the Arev, so to say, only enters the picture later on. And therefore, when the Arev writes the check to $120 to the Malva, at that point, the Arev is lending the Leive $120. When the Leive pays him back $120, it's a loan of $120 for $120, and therefore, there is no problem or ribbis for the Leive to pay back the Arev $120, even though the Leive only got $100 from the original guy. However, if the Arev is an Arev Kablan, and the Arev Kablan pays, so many Rishonim hold that since the Malve, the Goyisha Malve, theoretically could have come after the Arev, so when the Arev pays, the Kablan pays, we consider it as if the Malve handed the $100 to the Kablan, and then the Kablan turns it over to the Leive, and therefore the Kablan lent the Leive $100, and he cannot get back $120. According to these Rishonim, the Kablan sits on the fence. If the Leive indeed pays, so then we look at it like the loan was to the Leive, $100. Goy, Malve, to the Leive, $100. And when the Leive pays $120, that's a relationship between him and the guy, no problem whatsoever. But since the Kablan was available to pay even before we approach the Leive, if the Kablan indeed pays, so then we look at the Lamafreya that the original loan was to the Kablan, and since the original loan was to the Kablan, and he handed over the money to the Leive, so therefore, when the Leive now pays the Kablan back $120, that would be a problem of ribbis, and therefore the Kablan would have to absorb the ribbis. He can only be paid back the Karen. In fact, Reb Shmuel writes in Masechtas Kedushin that a regular Arev can work with a Heschaivos, could work with an exchange for the Hana, but an Arev Kablan is a Shliach. If the Kablan indeed pays, then it comes out of Mafrei, he was a Shliach, and therefore we'll have a ribbis problem if the Leive will reimburse the Arev, the Kablan, the $20 of ribbis. Now, it's very common when a young couple buys a house, so they need a parent to go ahead and to sign as a guarantor for the loan. Now, the question is like this. What happens if 1 month the guarantor ends up paying the loan? So may the son-in-law pay back his father and father-in-law the monthly payments that the father-in-law as a guarantor paid to the bank. So according to what we just learned, we would have to analyze, is the guarantor from the back, front to the bank, a Arev, a regular Arev, or is he considered to be an Arev Kavlan? And that will depend mostly on what the legalities are when the bank wants to collect the money. If the bank is allowed to go straight to the guarantor, if the bank would so desire, so then the father-in-law becomes Arev Kavlan. If he's going to pay the monthly rent, monthly mortgage, including interest, then the son-in-law would not be able to reimburse him. However, if the bank must go to the Leive, and only when the Leive has exhausted all possibilities to pay, then and only then may they go to the guarantor. So then there would be a case of a regular Arev, and then even if the father-in-law, the Arev, advances the money because they don't want to have any late fees, but still that would be the time of the loan between the father and son, and then the son would be allowed to pay back the entire amount. Now, really in truth, and this obviously has to be researched in every state and every municipality according to the banking laws, the real truth is generally something in between. That they have to be meidia, the loive, that they want money. In many municipalities, they have to make some sort of attempt to take from the loive. But when it comes to actually suing in courts, they are allowed to go ahead and sue the guarantor first. So they have to approach loive first. They have to send some threatening letters and give time to the loive first. But they don't have to actually bring the loive to court and get a court order against the loive in order to go to the arev. So we're someplace in between a regular arev and an arev kavlan. An arev in Shulchan Aruch, the case is that only after Beis Din gives up on the arev do we go after the kavlan. Only after Beis Din goes up on the loive do we go after the arev. A kavlan is first recourse. Over here, it is something in between. And therefore, it is a machlekes ha'poskim whether the father-in-law signing on the common bank loan is considered to be a regular arev or an arev kavlan, since it's a shayla of a deraisa, a heter iska should most definitely be made before the fact. I just wanted to point out that many loan documents are written as co-borrowers. Now, a co-borrower in Shulchan Aruch, Shtayim Shalavu, if two people together borrow $100, so Halacha says each one borrowed 50, and each one is an Arev Kavlan on the other 50. So that's in Dina of Cheshem Mishpat. One has to know when the word co-borrower is used, what in effect is happening in the banking laws. In other words, does the bank really say this is a fancy term for a guarantor and the first recourse is still the borrower? Or because it's co-borrowers, they can equally go after both of them? Generally speaking, even when the term co-borrower is used, the house is still the primary focus of the collection, and the one who the house is in their name is the primary focus of the collection. Obviously, these things can change, and one definitely should make a het iska before they start. If one did not make a het iska, then a shayla has to be asked, and depending on the exact situation in every case, we'll have to decide whether indeed it was dealing with an arev or an arev kavlan.
The Beis Chabad on the Parsha series has been brought to you by the Beis Chabad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultations, service, educational seminars, or media, please call 1-888-485-VAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Chabad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.